He walked into the dark pantry and Sirius followed. Without preamble, Harry told his godfather every detail of the vision he had had, including the fact that he himself had been the snake who had attacked Mr. Weasley. When he paused for breath, Sirius said, "Did you tell Dumbledore this?" "Yes," said Harry impatiently, "but he didn't tell me what it meant." "Well, he doesn't tell me anything anymore."
"I'm sure he would have told you if it was anything to worry about," said Sirius steadily.
"But that's not all," said Harry in a voice only a little above a whisper. "Sirius, I think I'm going mad. Back in Dumbledore's office, just before we took the portkey, for a couple of seconds there, I thought I was a snake. I felt like one. My scar really hurt when I was looking at Dumbledore. Sirius, I wanted to attack him." He could only see a sliver of Sirius's face. The rest was in darkness.
"It must have been the aftermath of the vision, that's all," said Sirius. "You were still thinking of the dream or whatever it was, and..."
"It wasn't that," said Harry, shaking his head. "It was like something rose up inside me. Like there's a snake inside me."
"You need to sleep," said Sirius firmly. "You're going to have breakfast and then go upstairs to bed, and then you can go and see Arthur after lunch with the others. You're in shock, Harry. You're blaming yourself for something you only witnessed. And it's lucky you did witness it, or Arthur might have died. Just stop worrying."
He clapped Harry on the shoulder and left the pantry, leaving Harry standing alone in the dark. Everyone but Harry spent the rest of the morning sleeping. He went up to the bedroom he had shared with Ron over the summer, but while Ron crawled into bed and was asleep within minutes, Harry sat fully clothed, hunched against the cold metal bars of the bedstead, keeping himself deliberately uncomfortable, determined not to fall into a doze, terrified that he might become the serpent again in his sleep, and awake to find that he had attacked Ron, or else slithered through the house after one of the others. When Ron woke up, Harry pretended to have enjoyed a refreshing nap, too. Their trunks arrived from Hogwarts while they were eating lunch, so that they could dress as muggles for the trip to St. Mungo's. Everybody except Harry was riotously happy and talkative as they changed out of their robes into jeans and sweatshirts, and they greeted Tonks and Mad-Eye, who had turned up to escort them across London, gleefully laughing at the bowler hat Mad-Eye was wearing at an angle to conceal his magical eye, and assuring him, truthfully, that Tonks, whose hair was short and bright pink again, would attract far less attention on the underground. Tonks was very interested in Harry's vision of the attack on Mr. Weasley, something he was not remotely interested in discussing. "There isn't any seer blood in your family, is there?" she inquired curiously as they sat side by side on a train rattling toward the heart of the city. "No," said Harry, thinking of Professor Trelawney and feeling insulted.
"No," said Tonks musingly. "No. I suppose it's not really prophecy you're doing, is it? I mean, you're not seeing the future, you're seeing the present. It's odd, isn't it? Useful, though.